everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Here we are. It's August 27th, 2013, a lovely day here in New York City. And I wanted to let you know what's going on with me at Responsible Eating and Living, my not-for-profit 501c3 organization. We just launched a new Swingin' Gourmets video. Now, I don't know if you caught part one of the Real American Barbecue with the Swingin' Gourmets. I hope you did, and if you didn't, you're going to have to catch up because it was a fun show. And now we have part two of the Real American Barbecue where we're making strawberry shortcake with cashew cream. And it's a fun 10-minute video. I hope you can check it out. It's at swingingourmets.com. You could find it there, or you could run over to the Responsible Eating and Living website and click on the TV tab. And it's the first video listed there under our food shows. So check it out. It's fun. And then let me know what you think at info@realmeals.org, info@realmeals.org. Okay, let's bring on my first guest today. I'm going to be bringing back Ginny Messina. She's a registered dietitian with a master's degree in public health from the University of Michigan. She writes about vegetarian and vegan diets for both the public and health professionals and speaks on vegan diets at scientific events for health professionals as well as events for the public. She's the co-author of two books on vegan nutrition, Vegan for Life, and the recently released Vegan for Her, which we are going to be talking about today. She also co-authored a vegetarian textbook for health professionals, The Dietitian's Guide to Vegetarian Diet. And she blogs at theveganrd.com. Welcome, Ginny, to It's All About Food.
Yeah, hi, Karen. It's great to be here.
Yeah, thank you. So it looks like we've got a series going here. We got Vegan for Life, and now we got Vegan for Her. Are we going to get Vegan for somebody else later?
Oh, I don't know. Everybody is asking for Vegan for Him, so it might happen. You never know.
Well, I think so. But anyway, let's talk about Vegan for Her. Actually, there's probably a lot in the Vegan for Her book that men can take advantage of, too, but it's good to get a special focus for women.
Yeah, and that's definitely true. The general nutrition guidelines are applicable to men, and there's information about eating to reduce risk for heart disease and osteoporosis, all things that men need to be concerned about, too.
Right. But, you know, it is good to focus on women's issues. You know, I like to think that there is a basic diet that is going to work for everyone, and we're learning more and more about certain foods and what they can do, and we'll talk about some of them. But, you know, we are a little different from men, and we have our own special diseases. And it's nice to have special attention that is directed specifically at our physiology.
That's right, yeah. And of course, you know, even some nutrient needs are a little bit different for women. For example, I talk a little bit about iron and the fact that premenopausal women have higher iron needs and what that means on a plant-based diet. So, yeah, there are concerns that are very specific to women.
Let's talk a little bit more about that iron thing. So, as most women know, we create a little extra blood every month premenopause to get ready for possible child making, and that takes some extra nutrition.
Yeah, it does. It does, and that is the reason. The fact that women menstruate means that they lose iron every month, and therefore their iron needs are about twice what men need on a daily basis. And so women do need to pay attention to that. Plant foods are packed with iron. There's plenty in legumes and whole grains in particular. We need to eat those foods along with vitamin C-rich foods like strawberries and orange juice and leafy green vegetables because that enhances the absorption of iron from plant foods. So that's really important.
Well, that's kind of the nice thing about plant foods. They tend to come naturally packaged with the things they need to go with. Sometimes you want to combine some high vitamin C food with an iron food, but a lot of times the foods have so many different things in them, and we need all of them together.
That's right. I mean, for example, you could eat spinach. It's got both iron and vitamin C, so that's really ideal. And you know, the nice thing is that iron absorption is better regulated from plant foods. And once women hit menopause, their iron needs drop dramatically. And getting iron from plant foods is especially good in that case, because there are some dangers associated with iron overload in later in life, and vegan women are less likely to have to deal with that. Our iron stores are a little bit better regulated for optimal health than people who eat meat.
Yay!
Yay
us! Yeah, there's, you know, something that I got from this book is that there's a lot that we don't know. And there's a lot that we're learning more and more, but there's plenty out there that's kind of a mystery, and we need to learn a lot more. You talked early in the book about the different kinds of studies and articles that are available for us, the tests that are done, and we should talk a little bit about that, actually. But, you know, it's next to impossible to do a study that would need to be done to really determine what is the ideal diet for humans.
Yeah, it really is. And there, you know, there are some answers. There are some areas where we have so many unanswered questions, like in the relationship of diet to cancer, for example. We just have not been able to define exactly what people need to do and what they need to eat in order to lower risk for cancer. On the other hand, we do know that plant foods are so packed with phytochemicals, you know, these thousands of plant chemicals that seem to have myriad health benefits, all different kinds of health benefits related to cancer and heart disease. So the evidence points us towards eating more plant foods and fewer animal foods. And, of course, vegans don't eat any animal foods. And I think we can feel pretty confident that that's to our advantage when it comes to conquering chronic disease.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, people hear these little sound bites all the time and take all kinds of information out of context and get really confused. So just a little brief summary about what we should be paying attention to and what we shouldn't be paying attention to, or should we just buy your book and forget about it?
Goodbye. You can just buy my book. The book has a food guide in it for vegans called The Plant Plate, and it summarizes very concisely, I think, the kinds of foods that we need to be sure to include in our diet to make sure we're meeting nutrient needs. For example, eating 3 servings of legumes every day. This is a food group that includes not just beans, but the vast array of soy products like tofu and tempeh and veggie meats. And also peanuts and peanut butter. For people who don't want to eat beans, have a peanut butter sandwich.
Yum.
It's that easy, yeah. And that easy and that familiar. So making sure you're eating legumes, eating whole grains. Everybody knows you're supposed to eat lots of fruits and vegetables, including some nuts and seeds in your diet. Really important for getting healthy fats and for optimal nutrient intake. So those are the kind of things we want to pay attention to. We don't need to think so much about whether your diet has the right amount of carbohydrate or the right amount of fat, or whether you're getting too much protein. If you're getting these nutrients from plant foods, you're eating healthy carbs, healthy fats, healthy protein. You don't need to worry about the ratio so much.
I like that. And you call it intuitive eating at one point in the book, which I really like.
Yeah, I talked about that in the chapter on weight management, about the importance of developing intuitive eating, which means very simply, it's a simple definition, not so simple to do. What it means is eating in response to your body's hunger signals, not because it's 12 o'clock and it's time for lunch, or you're depressed. We all know we're supposed to do that. It's not so easy to do. It's something that you have to practice by sitting down and eating mindfully, listening to your body's hunger signals. It takes some time. It takes some practice. But for a healthy body weight especially, it's something that's really important to do.
Well, that's kind of a lesson for all life, just being mindful and paying attention and not just reacting and doing things mindlessly.
Right.
That's our work. You concentrate a bit all throughout the book on soy foods, and soy foods have gotten a lot of press over the last few decades. Some people are petrified of soy foods, unfortunately, and there's really not a lot to worry about, is there?
No, there's really not. The compounds in soy foods that people are concerned about are isoflavones, which are phytoestrogens. They're plant estrogens. People get confused thinking that they're the same thing as the hormone estrogen that mammals produce. They're not. They are treated very differently in the body. The way they bind to receptors in different cells is very different from estrogen. And the kind of long story short, or in a nutshell explanation, is that isoflavones sometimes act like estrogen, sometimes act in completely opposite ways to estrogen, or sometimes act in ways that just have nothing to do with hormones. And the evidence indicates, for example, that young girls who consume isoflavones during puberty or during adolescence, when their breasts are developing, the isoflavones somehow impact breast development in a way that confers lifelong protection against breast cancer.
Wow.
Not a guarantee, but lowers risk for breast cancer. So that's really exciting information about soy foods.
Yeah, and shows the importance of getting a good start with nutrition when you're young.
Right, and it's really interesting because the protection does seem to come at that particular time of life. If you start eating soy foods in your 20s and 30s, it doesn't confer the same protection.
Right.
It has to be during breast development. So it really is so important for young girls to be eating a healthy diet.
But it doesn't mean that if you're older, it's all over either, because the body is so forgiving, and when you start taking away the toxic food and cramming it with great nutrition, it really, really adjusts very nicely, and you can thrive.
Well, it does, absolutely. You know, we know certainly with conditions like heart disease and clogged arteries, boy, you can turn that around pretty rapidly by eating a healthy plant-based diet. So, yeah, all is not lost once you're an adult. You can really change your health through good food choices.
And I don't bring this up as much as I used to, but I guess I'm bringing it up right now. But, you know, I had advanced ovarian cancer, and I was a vegan for a long time, and I was hit with that. And I've asked myself many times what happened, and I have a story in my head. I figured it all out. But it definitely proved to me that these foods that I'm eating were so powerful in helping me get through the treatment and heal afterwards. So maybe my childhood was not the best nutritionally.
Yeah.
And left a lot of junk behind, but I'm here. And I'm here to talk about the power of plant foods.
Yeah. And I think, I think that there are two messages there. One is that, again, as I said, there are many unanswered questions when it comes to nutrition and chronic disease. We don't know how to be bulletproof against disease, but we do know how to maximize a healthy diet so that we can get the most mileage out of it possible.
You talk too about women who want to get pregnant and how important nutrition plays in fertility, and then what to do once a baby is born and how to feed yourself and to feed your baby. You're probably familiar with the Weston Price Foundation, and they have a lot of interesting information on their site.
Yeah, they do. Interesting would be a kind
interesting
word.
Interesting. I don't recommend believing most of the things they say. But I remember reading that they recommended babies should be fed where the mother could chew up some meat in her mouth and then feed it back to the baby. What do you think of that?
Well, I don't think much of it. The idea, of course, is that red meat is rich in iron and zinc, and that babies need those nutrients, and there can be some very devastating effects when infants are not getting adequate iron and zinc and not having a healthy diet. But, of course, In the United States, most babies, when they're starting to eat solid foods, hopefully being breastfed before that, when they start to eat solid foods, they eat fortified cereals. And the research shows pretty well that those are just as effective in meeting a baby's iron and zinc needs as red meat, and certainly doesn't, you know, set a baby up for a lifetime of unhealthy eating habits.
Mm-hmm.
So I would stick with the breast milk and the fortified cereals, I think.
Okay, that sounds very good to me too. There's just, you know, I don't know if it's something I've been socialized on, but it just doesn't sound appealing to me.
No, it doesn't sound very appealing to me either. And I guess maybe at one time in our evolution, you know, mothers may have done that when they didn't have access to the kind of foods that we have today. So I don't think it seems like an awful lot of trouble and not very appealing. I don't think women need to worry too much about that.
Right. And those magical isoflavones in soy foods, not only are they good inside our body, but you talk, too, about how they're good on our skin.
Yeah, there's some really exciting research coming down the pike on that, showing that both consuming soy foods and using isoflavones topically can reduce wrinkles. And, you know, it's not Botox or anything, but it's a lot more natural and a lot safer. So the research on that is pretty exciting.
Yeah, well, we don't really know the impact of Botox yet. It's so new.
Right.
And it scares me personally. But
yeah, I know. Me too. And isoflavones are a lot more natural and a lot less expensive, too.
Yeah.
Don't involve any needles.
It's just from a bean.
Yeah. It's either eat the bean or put the cream on your face. Both of those seem pretty easy and not very scary.
Okay, so while we're on the subject of beans, I love soy foods, but if you can't eat soy foods, if you're allergic, there is a whole world of wonderful legumes out there, all different sizes, shapes, colors, and you talk about the importance of eating beans in this book in a number of different places.
Right, and absolutely. You know, I hear from people all the time, oh, I would love to be vegan, but I can't eat soy foods, or
mm-hmm.
I don't like soy foods. Soy is not essential in vegan diets or in any kind of diet. If people don't like them or if they have soy allergies, you can get all of the protein you need, all of the nutrition from eating other kinds of beans, the ones that are used so extensively throughout the world, like bean burritos and hummus and foods that we all love. And, again, you can have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and get your legumes that way. So yeah, soy foods are definitely, they're wonderful if you like them, but they are not essential by any means.
My partner Gary, he'd had weight issues most of his life and then found peace with a vegan diet, and one of his favorite foods is peanut butter, and as he grew up he was told he really couldn't eat it, and makes him very happy.
That he can have it now?
He eats as much as he wants.
Yeah, peanut butter is one of my favorite health foods, actually. So, you know, just packed with protein and fiber and healthy fats. It's there are no protein-rich animal foods that can boast that kind of thing.
Mm. And then I was curious when, I forget where you were talking about it with beans, but comparing dried beans to canned beans. Canned beans, what exactly did you say? Did I
talk about the glycemic index?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that I really encourage women to do in this book is to choose slow carbs, carbohydrate foods that are digested slowly and that cause a slow, gradual rise in blood glucose levels, because that seems to be protective against a whole host of chronic diseases. So one of the issues is that the more beans are cooked, the faster they're digested. And so canned beans they're not as slowly digested as the beans that you cook yourself at home. Doesn't mean the canned beans are bad. All beans are good for you. And if you are too busy to cook your own beans, then by all means you should use canned ones. Because for some of us, you know, they're just so convenient, and it's way better than not eating beans at all. They're so good for you.
But there is a little difference in terms of the glycemic index.
Right. That's the only difference. Otherwise, canned beans are just as good. And they're still packed with fiber. You know, they're still help to lower blood cholesterol. They're still a really good choice.
Yeah, what I do at home is I buy tons and tons of canned beans as a emergency backup thing.
Right.
And then I most of the time I use dried beans, and then when I'm in a pinch, I grab a canned bean and kind of, I want to use the expression, freeze two birds with one key.
Yeah, that's a better expression.
But this way I have all this great backup food in case of an emergency. Of course, nothing's ever going to happen here in New York City,
right.
Ever. And then, you know, for quick food, it's there, but most of the time it's the dried beans. But I had never heard that there was a significant difference between them.
Yeah, and I talk about it only because if women are willing to cook beans from scratch, it's a better choice, but it doesn't mean that canned beans are a bad choice. I tend to buy canned chickpeas because they take longer to cook, and so I use the canned variety of those, and then all my other beans, lentils, black beans, kidney beans, all of those I cook from scratch because they don't take that long.
They're fast.
Yeah.
Okay. I dog-eared so many different pages in this book. There's just so many different things to talk about. I was also curious, can we talk a little bit about folic acid and folate? Because, well, I've heard that we really don't want to supplement folic acid because it can be problematic and that we should eat it from our dark green vegetables. But then you do recommend for pregnant women that they might supplement with some of it?
Yeah, for pregnant women or women who are thinking about becoming pregnant, and you know, the difference is that the B vitamin folate occurs naturally in a number of vegetables, especially leafy green vegetables, and also in beans and orange juice and oranges. Folic acid is the synthetic version of folate that is used to fortify foods, and it's also used in supplements. Folate, the B vitamin, folate or folic acid, two different forms of the same B vitamin, is extremely important in the early stages of pregnancy. It's extremely important for development of the embryo, normal, healthy development. And what we know from the science right now is that women who take folic acid supplements or eat foods that are fortified with folic acid have a much, much lower risk of birth defects. And so because, you know, probably we can get the same benefit from just eating foods that are rich in folate, but the research isn't there. So we're still recommending that women eat a diet that's rich in foods that provide natural folate, but that they also take a folic acid supplement. And the benefits of doing so far outweigh any risks associated with that, especially because we're just talking about pregnancy. We're not talking about doing this throughout your entire life.
Okay. And, oh, I just had something, and it just slipped away quickly. Very good. supplements in general. Now, you mentioned B12, and I'm glad you did, because still people need to know how important it is.
Yeah, it's so important. It's not, plant foods are not, do not naturally provide vitamin B12. It actually comes from bacteria. That's where all of the vitamin B12 in the world comes from. And so vegans do need to supplement with vitamin B12. I recommend 25 micrograms of vitamin B12 as cyanocobalamin. That's the form you should look for on the vitamin label. And it's, you know, it's not, it doesn't make us so unique. It's not a uniquely vegan issue because all people over the age of 50, whether they're eating meat or not, no matter how much vitamin B12 is in their diet, actually need to also be taking supplements because as we age, it becomes harder to absorb the vitamin B12 that's found in meat and milk. So vitamin B12 supplements are important for vegans. They're important for everybody over the age of 50.
You've been doing this a long time, Ginny.
I have, yes. I've been doing it about 30 years.
And last night I was celebrating my mom's 80th birthday with my father and my mom and a couple that's friends with them. And the wonderful thing is my mom and her friend just recently decided to give up animal foods. I think they're still eating maybe eggs occasionally, but they've given up the dairy and all the other stuff, and this is really great. And my parents' friend's husband has done this a couple years ago, so he's just looking phenomenal. And we were all laughing because all of their friends are always asking him, and now his wife and my mom, where do you get your protein?
Yeah.
That's the same stupid question.
Yeah, it's a question that's been around for a long time.
How many times have you heard it in 30 years?
Yeah, a lot of times, absolutely. And, of course, it's, you know, we get our protein so easily on a vegan diet. Just again, legumes are packed with protein. They're so protein-rich, and there's also protein in grains and vegetables and nuts and seeds. So it's pretty easy.
You have a chapter, the last thing I wanted to talk about, because we just have a few more minutes left, and that's the female vegan athlete. And first of all, I want to say, yes, you go, girls. We can do it all. But we need some good food.
Yeah, and the thing that, and for all athletes, vegan or not, the thing that women need to be pay the most attention to is making sure that they're getting enough calories. Because when we see problems with female athletes, and again, this is not specific to vegans or vegetarians, it's for all female athletes, women who are over-exercising and not eating enough calories can develop amenorrhea. They lose their period, and that can have damaging effects to bone health and raise risk for osteoporosis. So just getting enough food is the number one most important thing for female athletes. And if you're getting them from, if you're getting enough calories from healthy plant foods, you're going to be getting lots of protein and carbohydrate and healthy fats automatically.
I was at a conference maybe 10 years ago, I think. It was a raw food conference, and there were a couple of young women talking about how they thought it was a good thing that they weren't getting their period anymore.
Oh, gee, that's really unfortunate to hear. It's very unhealthy to lose your period. That's just not normal development, and again, it can really have an extremely damaging effect on bone health.
Wow. Well, okay, now the last thing I want to know from you, since you've been doing this so long and educating so many people about a lot of different things, what are you eating? Are you eating some of these recipes that are in the back of the book, or what are you eating?
I love the recipes that are in the back of the book. I don't cook a great deal. I do bulk cooking every week and freeze things and put things aside. So I eat a lot of black bean burritos with guacamole and lentil soup and hummus sandwiches every day. And, of course, you know, lots of fruits and veggies and salads.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think about the food that you eat?
I think it's really good. I know it's really healthy, and
yeah.
I think it's really good.
I love my food. You know, you use a word occasionally, I think, rigid and restricted, and I don't think this diet is any of that. There are things that people realize they shouldn't be eating, but when you finally adjust your palate and taste buds, this is a fabulous diet.
It is a fabulous diet, and I do want people to know that the world of plant foods is extremely diverse and you know, really enjoyable, and there are no plant foods that we can't have. We've got lots of choices.
Okay, so stick to the plant plate. Jenny, thank you for talking to me and for Vegan for Her, the Women's Guide to Being Healthy and Fit on a Plant-Based Diet. Yes.
Thank you so much.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And her website is theveganrd.com. Check that out. All right, let's take a break, and then we're going to talk about chocolate. Luscious chocolate. Vegan chocolate. Ethical chocolate. Okay, we'll be right back. Okay, it's time for the second part of It's All About Food. Here on August 27, 2012. And I'm Karen Harkless. Thank you for tuning in. And now it's going to get really sweet. But sweet, maybe mixed with a little defiance. How about that? I'm going to bring on Lagusta Yearwood, who is a...
Hello.
Hi, Lagusta. I'm going to read you a little
Karen.
Bio first. How about that?
Oh, go for it.
Okay. It sounds like you are a restless, rabble-rousing chef-turned-chocolatier who's in love with deep flavor, ethical sourcing, farmers, the food poor people around the world have always eaten, lactic acid fermentation, and noodles. She lives in a little 1960s sunny ranch house in the tiny farm-focused town of New Paltz, New York, with her sweetheart, Jacob, and three cats. After years of cooking in dinky rented kitchen, she and Jacob renovated a former laundromat in downtown New Paltz to become a tiny little chocolate shop, Lagusta's Luscious, which you can find out more at lagustasluscious.com, which opened in June of 2011. Now, hello and welcome.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well, how are you?
Good. How embarrassing to hear your bio like that, but there it is, all true.
Yes, all true. You know, I told myself before I started the program a half hour ago that I should grab a little chocolate before I started this, and I didn't. And now, now I'm going to be in trouble. Okay, I'm just going to breathe deeply now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so before we talk about chocolate, I want to talk a little bit about when I met you, which was at the book reading for Defiant Daughters in Manhattan.
Yeah.
And I thought that your chapter in the book was my favorite.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you so much.
And what I liked about it was feisty and kind of positive. And I'm not judging anybody else in this book. We all have our own personal stories, and some of them are quite heartbreaking, and anyone that can rise above anything difficult is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you have a great attitude. And that kind of comes.
So much. It's easy when you're around a mood enhancer like chocolate all the time.
Well, I don't know. I know that chocolate does not work long term for some people. Might work short term. Yes.
And sometimes I definitely get stomach aches. That's for sure.
Yes. So I just wanted to mention Defiant Daughters. It's by one of my favorite publishers, Lantern Books. We talked to Carol Adams and Jasmine Singer when the book came out, and now I've got you on. And it's a great book.
Oh, what great company. I'm so honored. Wow.
Wow. Okay. Now, let's move on to chocolate.
Okay.
Why chocolate?
Well, let's see. I started out doing more savory cooking about, I guess, 13 years ago or so is when I graduated from culinary school. And I just gradually started making truffles one year, my partner and I, just for our friends for the holidays. And I don't know, friends of ours really love them, and we just started doing them more and more. And then before I knew it, I had two full-time jobs. One had a little mailing list, and I would ship out chocolates every month. And then the other one was I was running a vegan delivery service, cooking kind of wholesome, delicious meals with farmers market produce for New York City customers. So I had to pick one job, and I picked the one that involved more chocolate. So, yeah, here we are. I think also for me as a vegetarian and as a vegan, I'm really fascinated by chocolate because it is so rich and so decadent, and I feel like people really have this perception of veganism as very dry and depriving yourself of something. And it was really important for me to show people that you can have this very luxurious food that is completely cruelty-free.
Now, your products are more than just cruelty-free, which is a huge mouthful to begin with because there's so many chocolates out there that are not cruelty-free, containing dairy primarily, which is a big, bad thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But you're more than that. Your products are fair trade and organic, and very often you include ingredients that are locally sourced.
Yeah. I'm actually, as we speak, smoking some shiitakes in my smoker for this chocolate that we make that's kind of like a bacon bar. We call it the pig out bar. And it has smoked shiitake mushrooms and a caramel sauce and chocolate, and it's very savory and umami rich. And yeah, so, and those are actually local shiitake mushrooms. I started out life, I figured I would be an animal rights activist. And then that world was hurting my heart too much. So it's just too serious and sad and so many horrific stories happening all the time. So I kind of wanted to do something more pleasurable, so I got into the cooking world. And I think because I started out with that ethics at the forefront instead of starting out wanting just to sell chocolate. It's really important to us that we, you know, always use fair trade chocolate because of the human rights issues involved with a cacao bean trade, and always use organic chocolate because, you know, starting out as an environmentalist person who's concerned with the environment and animals and things like that, it just kind of, it felt like a good way to advance my principles and turn them into a business. So I feel so lucky that I've been able to do that.
Well, you're doing a wonderful thing because not only are you making chocolate, which most people love chocolate, but you're sourcing it with some really excellent ingredients, and your products are beautiful. I'm on your website. Everything's gorgeous. So it's, in addition, it's just beautiful art. Lovely.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yes,
yeah,
lovely.
it's really fun for us to kind of, you know, we have a bunch of people working at the shop, and it's just amazing to see, because we're in a college town, we have a lot of college kids who work here, and well, actually most of them have graduated by now, but yeah, you know, to teach people how to make these beautiful products and to see them grow and create, put in their own input into the products and learn, you know, cocoa butter painting and dipping truffles and things, and just, it's so really great to teach people, I don't know, how to make beautiful things.
Yeah, so there are a lot of things I'm thinking of here. I'm not quite sure how to get it all out, but let's see what happens. So there's a lot of things going on with the food system and sustainable food and food for the poor.
Yeah,
there's so many different,
absolutely,
so many different issues. And unfortunately, so many Americans today don't really know what they're eating. They don't care what they're eating. They just want,
yeah,
a lot of it, and they want it for cheap.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I think that one thing I've actually been amazed at with our chocolates is, you know, because they are organic and fair trade, our raw chocolate costs more, and sometimes it costs a lot more than, obviously, than Hershey's or a giant corporation like that. But what I'm really surprised by is, maybe it's because we're in New Paltz, New York, which is a very kind of middle-class, farm-friendly town, but people really seem to have a literal hunger for more authentic products that that cost a real cost that people are willing to pay for, and especially with our chocolates, they're so rich and intense that you don't need a huge bar at one sitting. You know, just, we have customers who come in for one truffle a day or one caramel a day, and that's, you know, it's $2, and that's their treat for the day, and then they come back tomorrow. So I think it's nice to be able to show people that there are ways that you can buy something that's sustainable and ethical and still have a treat, and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't have to feel like deprivation or like you're paying so much for it that it's not worth it.
I can't agree more, and I really would like to see a turn in our culture, and I hope it's going that way, where we look for maybe not quantity, but quality,
yeah,
where we source,
yeah,
more in the,
exactly,
United States. Our furniture should be well-made rather than particle board crap, and
mm-hmm,
with a little artistry in our clothing. Maybe we don't own as many jeans, but the ones that we have are made to last and are made,
yeah,
with quality ingredients and organic cotton, and the people that make it can live on their profits and send their children to school, and I think it would be a more beautiful place.
Yeah, I know. Maybe I'm just seeing the glass, you know, half full. But I do think people are getting so fed up with their badly made jeans and houses and chocolates and everything that it's just really refreshing when you find, I know for me, when I travel to another town, I want to find the little handmade shops where people are actually selling,
mm-hmm,
products from their local area made by local artisans. So, I mean, obviously there's a lot of income inequality issues that we have to address built in there, and not everyone has the privilege to pay $2 for a chocolate, but, you know, it feels good to be doing something to try to address some of these issues, if,
absolutely,
maybe not all of them at once.
I'm glad you're doing it, and I imagine that it hasn't been easy.
Yeah, I think the good thing for us is that I never started out with a really, I don't know, with any startup money or any capital. I just kind of figured I would do it out of my house, and then it got bigger, and then I rented a kitchen, and then it got bigger, and then we opened a shop. So I think if I had started out thinking, I want to make this business and employ 8 people and do this and this, that it would have been so overwhelming, and I never would have started it. But over the past 10 years, really, I've just built it up really slowly. So that feels good to me too, because I think in so many, you know, people think that they maybe have a great idea for a product or something, but want to jump in with both feet and build this huge business right away. And I know for me, it just feels better to go slow and not live beyond my means and build something up in a more sustainable way on all levels.
Now, I just noticed on your website that you started a savory dinner series.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
So is that to kind of satisfy the other part of you that likes to cook everything else?
Yeah, exactly. We have a little back room at our shop, and we actually just wrapped up our series for this year because the fall gets so busy with chocolate things. But during the summertime when there's beautiful produce around, we do one dinner a month. Well, actually, it's four nights, 12 people a night, and it's really amazing just to have – I have friends who come to every single one, and we really try to just go crazy and make it really lavish and I don't know, just kind of stretch ourselves with our cooking skills and everything. So it's really fun.
Great. I love to cook, and I love having people over for elaborate dinners where we just invent things.
Yeah,
it's really,
really great.
Yes. Very good. On the subject of chocolate, where do you get your chocolate that you turn into all of these beautiful confections?
Well, we get our just plain chocolate. We don't make the chocolate from scratch because that's a whole other set of, you know, skills.
Yeah.
We get our chocolate from a really nice company called Cho in San Francisco, and they direct source everything from farmers. The lines that we get, the organic and fair trade ones, are all from Peru and Ecuador. So they work directly with the farmers and set up cooperatives, and they have really good transparency about their sourcing methods and everything. So I feel really lucky that I was able to find them, because just, you know, sourcing chocolate is a huge minefield of ethical issues, and I'm able to talk directly with their sourcing manager, who's always, you know, going down to the farms and working with the farmers and checking everything out. So it's really I don't know, inspiring what they're doing, bringing this product to the market on a pretty big scale. I mean, they're a small company, but compared with my company, they're giants. So, yeah, it's pretty great.
Well, you know, I don't think big is better, and I really encourage more small businesses or medium-sized businesses, because it's manageable from a people standpoint. You're talking to the people that run this business, right? They know what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. I know for me, I would never want to have a shop where I wasn't there, you know, or we had three or four branches and people came in and never saw the people who make the chocolate. For us, it's really nice just to have that connection that if you're asking what ingredients are in something, the person you're talking to made the chocolate and can tell you all about it.
Mm-hmm. Chocolate is good. All right. So you have a fun website, and I don't know how you have the time to do all that you do, but you also blog.
Yeah. And a lot of help.
What?
I have a lot of help, thankfully.
Oh, that's good. Help is good.
Yeah.
But you come up with some really interesting combinations that go with chocolate.
Yeah, it's true. I don't know why that is, why we seem to have so many weird combinations. I think that I particularly just get bored with, you know, we definitely have a line of very classic truffles that are, I don't know, more, not contemporary, but more traditional, I guess I'd say. You know, we have peanut butter cups and peppermint patties and just more kind of, I don't want to say plain, but wonderfully, slightly plain things. But then, yeah, we kind of do go crazy, especially with local produce. We're always thinking about ways to use different ingredients. Like a farmer friend of ours grew a lot of sorrel this year, which is like a really sour spring green. And he had so much of it, he just gave me, like, bags and bags of it. So I was trying to think about what I could do with it, and I thought about the idea of making kind of like a natural sour candy. And it took a lot of sizzling around and a lot of working with sorrel, which, as it turns out, when you have a ton of it and you're constantly processing it in a food processor, kind of drives everyone crazy because it's such a sharp flavor. Like it gets in your eyes and things. So that's something we learned. But we finally made this sour sorrel caramel, and it's really amazing. It is like a natural sour caramel, so people are kind of going crazy over it.
Mmm. Very, very good. I don't imagine you've done any chocolate-covered ants or anything like that.
You know, we have not.
No bugs.
No, we haven't. This year with the cicadas, a lot of people said we should do something like that, but no, pretty much strictly vegan.
Yes.
No,
I was
no
just, I was just joking.
Yeah.
But you know, we've heard so many strange things about what people will put in chocolate, and
yeah, I know, it's true.
Yes, sorrel sounds perfectly fine to me, and shiitake mushrooms and anything else you want to put in your chocolate sounds pretty good.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I need to send you a box so you can try out all of our weird flavors.
Excuse me?
I need to send you a box so you can try out all of our weird flavors.
Oh, yes, weird flavor box.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that's exciting is that you have some white chocolate.
Yeah.
And that's that's like next to impossible to find in the vegan world.
It is. It's true. Yeah. And we've tasted pretty much probably all of the vegan white chocolates out there. And most are not exactly to my taste. They're a little bit odd tasting, I think, because people try to use a very low-fat milk, like rice milk or something, and it doesn't have that same richness. But we have found a really nice company, another small business that's working with us to make a really great white chocolate with coconut milk that doesn't taste coconutty. It just tastes really, really, you know, rich and wonderful. Mm. So, yeah, that is really exciting to me because just having more milk chocolate and white chocolate without dairy is kind of the holy grail, I feel like.
Yeah, and I'm kind of interested to hear about that, because I do use a lot of coconut milk, and I just made, I was mentioning my mom's 80th birthday, which was yesterday, and we celebrated big last weekend, and I made this 7-layer cake with a chocolate ganache and a chocolate buttercream filling, and I use a lot of coconut, and I love the way it tastes, but you still know it's coconut, and sometimes you don't want to have coconut.
Well, I wonder, were you using coconut oil, too, and coconut milk? Or just the coconut milk?
Oh, I used, well, you know, I don't know if you know this, but Let's Do Organic has a creamed coconut.
Yeah.
I used.
No, that might be why, because I feel like sometimes just the coconut milk, or if you use, like, a more refined coconut oil, it doesn't really have such a coconutty flavor. Mm. And it's a little bit more refined, but I feel like it's kind of a good trade-off.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It's true. It's not like you can't really make like a vanilla ice cream with coconut milk because it's going to be coconutty.
Right.
But you can make a really nice coconut ice cream.
Yes, and I love coconut.
I
love coconut.
Oh, yeah, it's great. I have this theory that dairy has a flavor, but it's just become our kind of baseline vanilla flavor.
Mm-hmm.
So no one really realizes that when you taste other milks, they have a slightly different flavor, but it's not negative. It's just their own flavor, just like cow's milk dairy has a flavor. So I think it's just a matter of, just slightly shifting our taste buds sometimes.
You know, that's such a good point. And I haven't had dairy in almost 26 years. And I still can remember what it tastes like. I can remember.
Yeah.
And it makes me kind of sick thinking about it. But it does have a flavor, and it does impact the chocolate.
Yeah, exactly. I worked at a restaurant once that was vegetarian, and they did very little dairy, but they once made a peach ice cream that there was a vegan version with coconut milk and a non-vegan version with cow's milk, and I accidentally tasted the wrong one.
Oops.
And my first thought was like, what is that flavor? It's such an odd flavor. And then I tasted the vegan one, and I was like, oh, this peach ice cream. It's so funny how, I don't know, your taste buds change so much.
Yeah, well, we can learn to eat anything and like just about anything, and it's a scary thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Now, you've been vegan for a long time, right?
Yeah, I guess about 16 years or so. So, since I was 15.
And was this something you did on your own, or your parents encouraged this? What happened?
No, it was just, I guess I became vegetarian when I was around 12. It's really funny. I have a lot of women friends who became vegetarian when they were 12. I feel like someone needs to write a study or something about this phenomenon.
Yes, I was 15.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. And then I kind of just slowly got more into animal rights just through thinking about where animal products came from and things like that. So when I was 15, I became vegan because I started going to some animal rights meetings. and everyone there was vegan, so I figured probably possible. And my mom actually became vegan with me, and she's still vegan, so it's really wonderful.
That's very wonderful. I like that. Well, here's what I'm putting out to the universe, and I hope that more people with their business want to not just focus on making a big profit, but making a quality ingredient that does some good for the planet and doesn't do anything bad.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, let's hope.
That's all. I think
it doesn't sound like so much to ask for.
Yeah, I love the vegan community because not everyone, but most, really care about people, care about animals, care about the planet, care about so many different things. And when I read the newspaper, which I only do on the weekends, it just blows me away. How can people be so heartless? I'm singing a song now. How can people be so cruel?
Yeah, it's true. I think it's very easy to have just to close your eyes to the realities of the world, you know, and I feel that way a lot when I think about things, and then I try to think, well, there's all these ingrained systems that are conspiring to keep you from realizing what's really happening.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, it does get pretty discouraging sometimes.
All right, I'm again back to your website, and I'm noticing there are some other products on here that I think are from other people.
Yeah, we have a couple great other products. We have my best friend Marisa, who does all of our baking for the shop. She spent a year developing a macarons recipe. So these French macarons that are totally different from macaroons. There's no coconut. They're really beautiful little delicate cookies with almond flour. And she's amazing. She's going for it. It's
they're beautiful, and they're gluten free.
Yeah, they are, absolutely.
Which is
awesome. She's making a batch right now. I can smell it through the walls as I'm standing outside.
I'm looking at them, and they are really, really lovely. So I look forward to bite into one of them one day, yes.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Then you also have, I'm just excited about vegan food, so I like talking about all different kinds. What's this tree-lined cashew cheese?
Oh, yeah, it's a really wonderful cheese. It's in so many stores now, but it actually started out being made in our back room at the shop. And then both of our businesses, this friend of mine who runs this cheese business and my business, were growing so much that we realized that we needed all the space that we had, and he realized that he needed a giant factory. So now that's where he's making the cashew cheese. And it's a really great AIDS cashew cheese. There's two varieties. There's a cream cheese that comes in a couple different flavors, and then a hard cheese. I don't think we have the hard cheese on the website right now, but they're both really amazing. Just so clean tasting, and it has a real nice, you know, sharp cheesy flavor. So yeah, the world of vegan cheeses is just getting better and better.
Yay!
Yeah,
I like it, and you're
pretty wonderful.
You're a delicious part of that. So thank you, Augusta.
Thank you.
We'll definitely have to try all of these products sometime soon, and I'm going to have to go and get some chocolate now. So thank you for joining me, and all the best with your delicious products. Thank you for making this world a yummy place.
Great. Well, thank you. Thanks for this wonderful show.
Okay.
Okay.
You take
care.
Day. Okay.
Okay.
Hi, so just a minute or two here. I'm Karen Hartglass, right? You're listening to It's All About Food. And when you're looking for chocolate, definitely go to Augusta's Luscious, and you can find her online at augustaluscious.com. Even if, just look at the pictures. They are so, so beautiful. And you know me, I always like to talk about treats and how treats are things that you don't have every day. They're something special. And they should be made with high-quality ingredients so that they really feel like a celebration. And that's what these foods are, and I wish there were a whole lot more of them. Okay, so I just wanted to let you know next week is going to be spectacular. I am so excited about my guest. I'm going to have David Simon, and he has a new book out called Meatonomics. You have to listen to this. It is going to be an awesome half hour. He has done so much work about the animal food industry and how through all kinds of hidden costs they've burdened us with over $400 billion. And I can't wait to hear from him. And then the second part of the show, Bava Ram is going to be talking about his book, Warrior Pose. And I loved, loved, loved reading this book. And towards the end, I didn't even know that there was going to be some food references. And when I read them, I thought, oh, great, I can talk to him on my show, because I always like to tie the food issue into what we're talking about. But he had a broken back, failed surgery. He was running around as a network news war correspondent, and then he had stage 4 cancer and managed to heal himself and find peace. And it's a beautiful, inspiring story, so I really can't wait to talk to him. So join me, please, next week, September 3rd. And for now, go to responsibleeatingandliving.com and the swinggourmets.com site, where you can see our newest video. Okay, so you've got a lot to do. We'll talk next week. I'm Karen Hartglass, and this has been It's All About Food. Have a delicious week.